to the point in our study where it really, really, as if it's not been interesting enough already, it really starts getting interesting because we're going to be looking at really two major parts that we have left in this study. The first one is we're going to begin this morning looking at the fall of angels. And then the last part of our study is going to be focusing on the angel of Jehovah and what the Bible says about that. And but, you know, we've been up to this point looking at angels, that all these different passages and all these different concepts that the Scriptures give us about angels and, you know, what they look like and what they do and how they get around and all of those aspects. One of the areas that we've been studying over the last couple of weeks was looking at the bad angels, okay? Satan and his angels and the stuff that they get into, the stuff that they do, and part of what we looked at was that the bad angels, they're the ones that we have to contend with, we saw. They're the tempters. They're the ones that cause us, not cause us, but they tempt us to, you know, sin, and their work is to try to pull us away from God, is what they're trying to do. So we were looking at these bad angels. We looked at the good angels, what do they do, and so forth. So we acknowledge that we have two groups of angels. We've got the good angels that are serving God and working on His behalf for us, working on our behalf in our relationship with God. We've got the bad angels who are working against us, you see, working for Satan, trying to win as many people away from God as possible. So we talked about this idea that the Scriptures indicate to us of this warfare that is going on, spiritual warfare, and we're caught up in the middle of it, okay? Well, we go back then to the question, how did all of this begin? Where did it all come from? Where did these bad angels come about and so forth? So this morning we're going to take a look at the fall of angels, and we're going to begin, first of all, looking at the fact of the fall, okay? That the very realization that we have that there are bad angels tells us that indeed they fell away from God, okay, because at one time they were good angels. How do we know that? Based on our study that we've done so far, what have we seen that tells us that indeed they were at one time good angels, and so now they're bad angels? At some point they had to fall. Okay, but we have to go back to creation. We saw already in various passages that the angels were created by God. I want to call your attention to Psalm 148, verses 1 through 5, is where we're going to begin this morning. Because this particular passage, you know, removes any kind of doubt whatsoever of where the angels, all angels, both good and bad, where they originated from. Okay? Psalm 148, verses 1 through 5. Let me get somebody to read that for us. Okay, mentions all of these different things, right? Sun, the moon, the mountains, the angels. He commanded, and they were created. Okay. Now, what does the Bible tell us about God's creation? Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. When God created everything, yeah, He looked upon all of His creation and saw that it was good. Okay? So, originally, all of the angels that God created were good angels. In other words, we need to understand, I don't know of anything in the Scriptures, if you find it, let us know, please, But I don't know of anything in the Scriptures. In fact, I know everything the Scriptures indicate to me would be the opposite. There's nothing that I can find anywhere that would indicate that God intentionally made bad angels. Okay? Is that everybody with me on that? Okay? And if we go back and we look at and we understand the nature of God, okay, then does that not reinforce that understanding? God does not create evil because God is good. And everything that God created was good. Okay? So God did not create good angels and bad angels, you see. He created them all as good angels. But as we've seen already in our study earlier, one of the things that we saw about the nature of angels and God creating these angels is that they were given what? Free will. Okay? And because they were given a free will, they have the right to choose, just like we do, whether to obey or disobey. And so some chose and continue to choose to obey God, while others chose to disobey God. Now here's where it gets kind of sticky in trying to figure the question of when did this all happen? When did the fall of Satan occur? We know from Genesis chapter 1 that God created everything. Okay, we have the story of creation there. But we also know that by Genesis chapter 3, what takes place? Yeah, so Satan is already on the scene by Genesis chapter 3, isn't he? Okay? And so he's there tempting Adam and Eve to sin against God. He's already up to no good in the world that God has created. So if you read the narrative through, starting with Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, what do we read there? In the beginning, that's the proof, as you've heard me say before, that we know that God loves baseball, right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? Okay, but then, and you read through, and it tells us how each day he created, you know, and so forth. We get to chapter 2, and it's going back through talking about how he created man and that. And then chapter 3, man's already sinned. So it's like, you know, in 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth. On the seventh day, he rested, and on the eighth day, Satan tempted Adam and Eve. Okay? If you're reading through the narrative in that kind of way, looking for a chronological thing to occur, then it could be very easy to get that impression that, you know, but I don't think that's the intent of what the Scriptures want us to see. The reality is we don't know how long Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden before Satan came along and tempted them. It could have been the eighth day. It could have been, you know, 10 years after that. We just don't have any idea. There's no way to know. Anything, any kind of a time that we would put on it would be purely speculative at best. Exactly. So that asks us the question, what is the time of the fall of Satan? And the Scriptures just simply do not tell us when that occurred. All right? So we have to go back and kind of look at it with some of the things that we've already understood about it. And one of the things that, and we look at this whole thing of creation. Now, the story of creation that we read about in the Scriptures, what day was it that it tells us that God created the angels? It doesn't. So when were the angels created? When he created man? One possibility. In the beginning? Okay. When was that? In the beginning, you see. Remember, we've talked about this before in the concept. Remember, we looked at the whole idea of what happens to time once we leave this world. This is a physical world we live in. So outside of this world, what happens to time? it doesn't exist. There are no days or weeks or months or years or anything like that in eternity. Okay? So, in the beginning, whenever that was, okay, when God created the heavens and the earth, I think it's reasonable to understand that whatever time that was, however, whenever that was, that's probably when that creation took place. Let me share a theory with you that I've run across on this, that this particular theory says that the creation of the angels and the fall of man and so forth all occurred between Genesis 1, verse 1, and verse 2. Okay? Right there in between those two verses. God created the heavens and the earth, the theory says. I'm going to read these different points of this theory. God created the heavens and the earth. The angels rebelled, and there was a war in heaven. The earth, what does verse 2 tell us? The earth was formless and void, and this theory says, because of this war that was going on in heaven. And then God created a beautiful world, physical world, that we know and experience. Now, that's a theory is all it is, okay? That's someone that said, maybe this is how it happened. Okay? I don't know. I have nothing that I can stand on and disagree with that. And I, to be honest with you, I don't have a better theory myself. Okay? Because the reality is the Bible just doesn't tell us when those things occurred. But when you understand and you look at the concept, as I mentioned before, as we've talked about before, this concept of time, and time in eternity does not exist as we know it, then it's very easy to understand that these things probably or possibly took place in that particular time frame, that God created the heavens and the earth, and in that, at that particular point when he was creating the heavens, created the angels. Now, how long of a time span took place between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. Again, we don't know. We don't really know. Okay. Because we don't really start counting the stuff that he created on the first day until later on, do we? So after this statement is made. So the idea, at least in my mind, is that, you know, this has been created. God created these things. And at some point, that there was rebellion in heaven. We're going to read about that in more detail a little bit later on here. That there's this rebellion that goes on with Satan and his followers and God and his angels. And we have the rest of this story of creation that occurs. John? You talking about like in the New Testament where people are possessed by evil spirits? Or, right, upon Saul, right. I think that's part of the work of Satan and so forth. God used, and see, one of the things you always have to remember, we've talked about already before, Satan is doing his work, right? But God has ultimate control over Satan and what he does or doesn't do, what he allows and doesn't allow. And so then the idea is, can God use Satan or his minions to accomplish what he wants to accomplish? And I think the answer to that is, yeah, he doesn't do anything he wants to because he's God. And so I look at that as being that those spirits, they're evil spirits, that, yeah, that's part of Satan's world. That's part of his dominion and his followers. Yeah. Well, I think that the assumption from scriptures is that there are only two kinds. There's either good spirits or bad spirits, and the designation, if it's not a bad spirit, it's a good spirit. Because otherwise it'll tell you it was an evil spirit. That's my understanding of it. So we have we have this creation that has occurred, and we have this fall that has occurred, and thus the evil spirits. We have Satan and his angels that have rebelled against God. How long that rebellion took, you know, when, how, and so, we just don't know. Okay? So everything that we say concerning that aspect of it is purely speculative. The one thing that we do know is that indeed there was a fall. Okay? That is a fact, that the angels did fall away from God. But what was the cause of all of that? Why did they fall away from God? When we look at the fall of the angels, what would be the reason for that? Genesis chapter 5 and verse 3 may give us a little bit of an indication here. When we look at this idea of these angels that have fallen, they're created with a free will, right? As we've said over and over again already. And they chose to disobey God. Now, Genesis chapter 3 and verse 5 tells us what? What is Satan indicating here to Eve? That particular passage indicate to us as a possible reason why Satan rebelled against God? What did that statement say? Yeah. Yeah. You see, is it possible, speculative, okay, I don't have an answer for this, is it possible that when God created all of the angels, he created them good, they didn't know difference between good and evil? Okay? If Satan wanted to be like God, okay? He wanted God's place. Okay? The indication I get is that Satan wasn't satisfied being an angel. He wanted to be in the place of God. It kind of gives us a little bit of an idea of possibly, you know, why. I mean, because, you know, as human beings, we can sit here and we study the scriptures and we read about heaven and God and being with him, and that's what we all want, right? Yeah, I got a couple of amens over here on this side. Y'all don't really want that? Is that, you know? You see, that's what we all want, and so we tend to look at this idea of being with God in heaven as like, you know, yeah, why wouldn't you, right? And why would you do anything to jeopardize that, especially if you already have it, right? And so it's kind of, you know, mind-boggling to us as to here Satan is there in heaven with God, and why would he ruin that? Right? and doesn't that have something to do with that whole issue of free will? If God gives us free will, then does that not automatically imply that we're able to act out that free will and then face the consequences of whatever choices we make with that free will? So I think that the answer, a lot of people say, why didn't God just destroy him? As you said, why didn't God just destroy him and wouldn't have this problem? Because of free will. Because if God was going to destroy everybody that chose not to be with him, then there's really no free will. And I think that ultimately, when you look at it, you understand it is that God wants those to be with him who want to be with him. That's the whole issue of choice. See, God could have created us without a free will and we'd all be with him. You see? But that's what love is all about, that it's a, love is a choice. You see, that we choose to love God as he has loved us. And so with that comes the other side that says someone can choose not to. And if you take that away, you say, well, if you choose not to, then, okay, you're going to cease to exist, then you really don't have free will anymore the way it is. Johnny, you have a comment? I would say probably not, because the fruit of that tree was a physical fruit of some kind. You know, everybody says it was an apple, but we don't know that. It doesn't say. It just says the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The issue there was not the eating of the fruit. The issue was the disobedience. Okay, it could have been cake. Okay, God put a cake in the center of the garden and said, "Don't eat that cake." You know, as we do to our children. You know, we make a cake or cookies, and you say, "No, don't eat those. Those are for after dinner." You see, if you eat those cookies, you're going to get a spanking, or you're going to have to go to bed without any dinner, or whatever the consequence. Well, sometimes children choose to disobey, and they sneak a cookie, right? Or they run their finger through the icing, right? That's choice that we gave to them. The issue or the object of it really is not the issue. The issue is the disobedience. So I think the indication is that there was something, somehow, that God had given the angels' instructions, and Satan chose to disobey that. Whatever those are, who knows? Because we're not told. But probably something, you know, in that they were given instructions that indicated they had a choice, and Satan chose to disobey God in that. Now, whether it was to eat some kind of spiritual fruit or not to eat it, I don't know, because it just doesn't tell us. But I think the issue is that whatever there is an issue of disobedience. God said, "Don't do this," and they chose to do it anyway. And apparently, that's the only thing I can come up with, is that apparently there must have been something like that with the angels in heaven, that God instructed them, "Don't do this," and they did. You know, whatever that might have been. Judy and then Ray over here. Okay. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. See, I think if we understand it this way, I think what fundamentally we're looking at, we talk about disobedience, you know, eating the fruit and hope, it really all boils down to a challenge of God's authority. That's really what it is. And so we see, you know, whatever took place between God and Satan, it was a challenge of God's authority as God. Okay? We have to understand it that way. We have to understand that whenever we disobey something that God has told us to do, is that not the same thing? It's a challenge to God's authority. God has the authority to say, don't do this. You see? And when we go against that, when we disobey, we're challenging God's authority to tell us not to do that thing, whatever that thing is, whether it's not to eat of the fruit or whatever it might be. It's the same issue. We are challenging God's authority. And I think what we see through the Scriptures and the story of Job is that perfect example of where Satan continues to challenge God's authority. You go and you look at the story of Jesus and his temptation in the wilderness when he first began his ministry. That's a challenge to God's authority, isn't it? You see? And so that's when you boil it all down to where the rubber meets the road, that's what it's all about. Sin is a challenge to God's authority. Does God have the authority to tell me to do this or not to do this? You see? And so either I decide that God has the authority and so therefore I'm going to obey him, or that I say God doesn't have the authority and so I'm not going to obey him. And then what I'm doing in my life from then on is challenging God's authority. And that's exactly what Satan continues to do, is to challenge God's authority. Well, when people are sinning, that's the same thing. We're doing the same thing. It's challenging God's authority that he has told us not to do something. Ray, you had a comment? May not be. Settles it, right? Exactly. Yeah, it's still settled. Exactly. Exactly. But again, see, it all does come down to that issue of authority of God. Does God have the authority to tell me to do something or not to do something? Either I believe that and accept it, or I don't. And that's the problem that Satan had, was not accepting the authority of God. He wanted to. And we're going to see a little bit more of an indication of that challenge to God's authority as we continue on down in here and look at a couple of other things. Judy, you have another comment? And that's what, I mean, when you go back and you look at when God told Adam and Eve not to eat of that fruit, how did he put that to them? It indicates, first of all, that they have a choice, okay, and that's how we know and understand that God created us with a free will, by the statement that he made to them, but then also then there is the result of that. There's the fact that you have a choice, but then there's also consequences to your choice. What did he say to them? Don't eat of the fruit of this. In the day that you do, what does that imply? That implies choice. Okay? Don't eat of the fruit of this tree. In the day that you do, the consequence is what? You will surely die. Okay? So the choice is there in that statement. God gave him a choice. He said, don't eat of the fruit. You're not going to be able to anyway. So, well, I don't know why I'm mentioning that tree to you. How ridiculous is that? You see? In the day that you do, that is, if you choose to eat of that, see, then the result or the consequence is going to be death. And so we know from that then that death comes into the world at that point in two ways. Number one is physical death. Man from that point is no longer immortal, okay? And then secondly, it's spiritual death in that they were separated from God, okay, spiritually. And so we see with that choice comes a consequence, don't we? And Satan knew of that because he'd already experienced that choice and the consequence. He was separated from God. See? And as we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, in this whole issue of spiritual warfare, what's it really all about? It's about us. It is a war that Satan is waging against God to win as many human beings as possible away from God. If you think about it this way and understand it this way, we are God's creation, right? Right? Okay? He created us as being good, okay? The whole doctrine of, you know, original sin and babies are born with sin and unless they get baptized, they're going to go to limbo, they can't go to heaven. That's garbage, okay? It's not biblical, all right? God created us good. We get to a point where we grow in our lives as a human being to where we choose, we're able to make an informed choice, you see, to rebel or challenge God's authority in our life, we sin. Okay? But God created us as good to begin with. We are, in God's creation, we are His prize. Okay? What Satan wants more than anything is to win us away from God. To take as much of his creation that he loves away from him. That's what he's trying to do. That's what the battle is all about. That's what the warfare is all about. To try to get us to challenge God's authority and to let go of him. Okay? And so that's what we're in the midst of in this spiritual warfare, because Satan is trying to take us away from God. Not take us away in that he doesn't have the power to pull us away, but to cause us to let go of God so that he can win more and more of God's creation. Okay? Ray? Absolutely. If we go back to the analogy that I was using a little while ago of you know, making a cake or cookies or what have you, I make a cake or I make a cake. I know the purpose that I have for that cake. My mom used to do this all the time as I was growing up. She made cakes for bake sales at school and all these kind of things. And she would tell us, don't eat that cake, don't touch that cake. But she didn't always tell us why we couldn't eat the cake. You know, she made a cake, all right? I didn't know what her purpose for that cake was. I just knew there was a cake, but I don't believe for a minute that my mom made the cake for some lofty purpose that she had and put it there on the table with even a secondary purpose of tempting me to see if I would, go and get the cake after she left the room. I don't think that my mom did that at all, you see. I don't think that was her intent, was to tempt me, say, well, I'm going to go over here and stand and see if he runs his finger through that cake, which I did many times, by the way. There were consequences, sometimes I didn't remember anything that happened after that day, it's like the rest of the day was blank. But, you know, so I don't think we can fairly say that, yeah, God put it there to tempt them. You know, as he puts it there, he knows what his purpose is for that tree. He's going to stand over on the side and say, all right, let me see if they're going to do it. No, I don't see that. You know, we don't do that to our children. Not most normal people don't, with the intention of tempting them. So I don't think that we should ascribe to God that he would put that in there just for the purpose of tempting mankind. But it does serve his purpose, is, I think, at perhaps at very least, is to allow man to have that free will or what have you. So we see this, that there's this authority, this challenge to God's authority being, you know, put by Satan. What is the result of the fall of Satan and his angels? Okay? You know, as we read through the scriptures and we get, John, as you brought up earlier, this indication of evil spirits, you know, and so forth, we see from the scriptures that the result of this fall, whenever it occurred and however it occurred, and again, we just don't know the answers to those, that Satan and his angels became evil and corrupt. Okay, again, they were not created that way by God. They were created good. But the result of this fall, and whatever precipitated it, whatever happened with it, they became evil and corrupt. Another result of that, we look at consequences that we've seen in our study previously, that there are some of those angels that the scriptures indicate to us are being held in bondage. Okay? But then there are some who are free to do Satan's bidding. Now, why are some being held and others allowed? I don't know. It doesn't tell us that. It just indicates to us that there are some that are in bondage being held, and there are others who are free to do the things that they are doing. What the other result is that will come to all of them is that eventually they will all be cast into eternal fire. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 41 confirms that for us. So, you know, again, we see in this the results. When people are disobedient to God, we can kind of follow that same thing, can't we? We can see what happens to someone when they are disobedient and the kind of the path that it begins to take. And if they don't turn from that disobedience, eventually there is that same result, isn't there? You see? So Satan has the same eternal destiny that mankind does who are disobedient to God. Those who challenge God's authority, whether it be heavenly beings or whether it be human beings, they face ultimately the same eternal consequences. But also, likewise, those heavenly beings that are faithful and obedient to God, as those earthly human beings who are obedient and faithful to God, do we not all face the same consequence for our choice? That is, that we'll be with God for all eternity. We face the same eternal consequences. So that's one of those issues or one of those areas in the study of angels that brings us, that is, all of God's creation, brings us all together in a sense on the same level. You see, though we've looked at earlier the differences and, you know, angels, good or bad, are spiritual beings, we're physical and so forth, ultimately, in the end, when it's all said and done, whenever that end is coming, and by the way, you know that it's supposed to be in 2012, you know that, don't you? Just thought I'd throw that in there for you. But whenever it really occurs, okay, the ultimate end, then those men and angels who have rebelled against God's authority will be in everlasting torment. Those who have been faithful to God, both men and angels, will be with God in his presence. So ultimately, we end up facing, all of God's creation faces that same the same thing. Okay, but that's what happens to them now. We've got just a few more minutes here. Let me give you a couple of things to think about as we talk about Satan specifically. This next part is looking at Satan as a fallen angel. That will give us, I think, a little bit more insight into how this event took place and, you know, and so forth. where, of course, we're first introduced to Satan in Genesis chapter 3 in verse 1. There, he is referred to as what? He's a serpent. Okay? Well, it shouldn't cause us any concern. We've already seen through our study that angels can appear as what? Anything God wants them to. Anything, you know, they can take on all kinds of physical forms. They're not limited like we as human beings. What kind of things can we appear as? Do what? As humans, right. This is a trick question then. We don't have the ability to change ourselves, you know, into looking like all kinds of other things, you know. Although some people change themselves looking at some... Anyway, we won't go there. but you know, we're very limited. All we can do is change the physical features that way. But Satan, so he appears as a physical being in the form of a serpent, that we first find him in the Scriptures. In Revelation 12 and verse 9, John describes him as the great dragon. Okay, the great dragon who was hurled down. He says that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan. Okay, Genesis chapter 12 and verse 9. So in that description that John gives us there, we see this picture of, you know, this dragon kind of a being, or you know, again goes back to the reference of some kind of a serpent or what have you. When we go back to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, we look at the punishment. What are the consequences of disobedience that God has meted out to Adam and to Eve and to the serpent? What's the one thing that is said there about the serpent that kind of reflects back to this idea of a dragon, serpent kind of a thing here? What does it tell us here that what's going to happen to the serpent? What's he destined for the rest of his being? He's going to crawl on his belly. Rick, is that what? Doesn't mean that the dinosaurs were evil. You know, we can go into the whole issue of, you know, what did the dragon look like? I don't know, you know. I don't think that he was, you know, what's that Disney cartoon, you know, Peach Dragon, you know. I don't think he looked that friendly, you know. He's probably, you know, more of the picture of the... I'm not a science fiction buff or any of that kind of thing. We'll close with this. But, you know, I watched this movie one time called Reign of Fire. I don't know if any of you ever seen it. It's about, you know, kind of the future world and these dragons that, you know, have kind of taken over the earth. And there's some hideous-looking dragons in that thing. I mean, it's like, whoa, you know. When I read about Satan in the Scriptures and it indicates dragon, that's what comes to mind, is that kind of a thing like that. So we're gonna go from here. We're out of time this morning. Let me challenge you to do this. Go through and look for two things in the Scriptures if you have time this week. Satan, first of all, has a lot of different names. We're going to talk about all these different names of Satan, see which ones you can find. And then also, there are several different characters or characteristics of Satan that the Scriptures mention. Okay, and so we're going to... we're going to look at those next week. All right? Dale. Yes. I don't know. We'll see. Good. That'd be an excellent study. All right. Thank you all very much. Very much.